I want to talk about Tu B'Av. Tu B'Av is this Friday, the next Chag, the next holiday in our calendar is Tu B'Av. What are the, let's review some of the basics, and then I have a few little yonim here from Tu B'Av. Shom Havan Aliyah. Okay, on Friday. Okay, first thing first, let's go to the basics. Number one, what exactly happened on Tu B'Av? There are six events that happened on Tu B'Av. Number one, Shehutru Shvatim Lava Zeh B'Zeh. And there's a lot of depth in this. We know the Shvatim were allowed to intermarry. That until they conquered Eretz Yisrael, until they divided the land, the Shvatim were not allowed to intermarry with one another because that would result in a complication in the division of the inheritance of the land. So therefore, after seven years of dividing the land, it was finally settled. So Chazal, we have a legend, we have a tradition. Chazal said it's not exactly clear why it was without Tu B'Av. Maybe there is some calculation I did not see, but we have a tradition that it was on Tu B'Av when the 14 years of Kibush Lechila came to an end, and now there was no longer a danger that Lo Yisov Nachla Mi Mateh El Mateh was no longer in danger, and they were allowed to marry one another. It's a very great simcha of marriage. Also ties very much into the very most popular theme of Tu B'Av is that Lo Hayu Yavam Tovim Lishol Ki Tu B'Av Shebohem Benos Yisrael. They would go out into the vineyard, the Kramim, and they would dance, and each one would borrow clothing from one another, white garments. They wore white garments. Everyone wore white. It was not everyone's garment was the same. It wasn't like you come to Shul on Yom Kippur. Everyone on Yom Kippur, they wear the same kittel. Not the same. You know, there's some, you go to the store, there's some kittel that cost $100 and some only cost $30. Yeah, $200. Okay, Angie, you go to Eichel's to go buy a kittel. You can buy the cheapest one, it's $30. And the most expensive one can be a few hundred dollars. They have designer. What?
You get a knockoff.
Okay, they have no tachlichim. Tachlichim also. They have different qualities. Okay, but it says it's very interesting. You get the assumption they all wear the same costume. It's not so. Everyone wore a different dress. Not everyone was the same. The only thing they had in common is that the dress had to be white. The dress had to be white, and you couldn't tell who was wealthy, who was poor, because everyone would borrow one dress from another. They went out, they would dance, and they would tell the Bachurim, lift up your eyes and watch me dance. Shema Senai, watch me dance, and everyone would peddle what they had to offer. A girl that was a Mcheses would say, look at my yichus. A girl that was beautiful would say, look at my beauty. A girl that was wealthy would say, listen, you want a good life. Okay.
So, why was it more then and us now?
Obviously, we don't understand what this was about. Obviously, when Chazal say these words, there's a lot more depth in these words than what meets the eye. Okay? Obviously, it goes without saying. The Mitzvah
stuff.
It probably was man. Okay, whatever. You know, we have to understand. We don't know what this means. Listen, this took place also twice a year on Tuvah Yom Kippur. Can you imagine today on Yom Kippur, the day when you're Isaac in Tshuva, the holiest day of the year, you're going out to a social event to dance? Obviously, there's a lot more to it.
Wow. Like okay. My mother says she grew up in Jersey City. After the Yom Kippur night, they used to
Yom Kippur dance.
Yom Kippur dance.
And a lot of Shaduchim were made.
At 10 o'clock,
they came to the dance, and a lot of Shaduchim probably were made. So the parents are probably very happy that Shaduchim were made.
The question is, the girls wear black hats or they wear regular?
Okay, whatever it is, but it's interesting. A lot of the ideas, things that happen, they all tie back to the idea of the Mecholos. It was a day dedicated to Shaduchim. Today, you know, they really the people who want to make money off this today, they go to town, and you go look at the newspapers, yeah, full page ads. Oh, but just give us some money. Give us some money, and we'll do all the magic for you. We'll go to Amuka, we'll install for Shaduchim. They take advantage of people's problems, but that's what, and all comes back to the Shaduchim And one of the examples of shidduchim, Karabaisa, please. One of the examples of shidduchim is that they were allowed to marry. One shevet was allowed to marry to another shevet because that has very deep meaning. Because this comes right after Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is the Churban of Eretz Yisrael, the loss. They were not allowed to marry one another until there was an achiz, until the land was firmly in the hands in Klal Yisrael. So this, to a certain degree, is the Nechama. It's like Nachamu, Nachamu Ami. It always comes out right next to Shabbos. Nachamu, Tu B'Av, is because this is the time that we're focusing on, the time when we first took possession of Eretz Yisrael. You weren't allowed to, during the 40 years in the Midbar, you weren't allowed to marry one Shem with another Shem. During the first 14 years, Eretz Yisrael was still weak. It was still weak in our hands. We didn't conquer it yet. We didn't divide it. When the Tu B'Av is the day when, for the very first time, it was considered in Halacha, Eretz Yisrael is ours. We are in full possession. And this is very great Nechama for Klal Yisrael, that don't focus on the churban, focus on the good, be optimistic.
But the land was passed off from son to father to son, right?
Then it goes to a daughter, but that is correct. But it was you're not mechuyev to. If you can't find a sheikh, you can do whatever you want. But we give you we tell you good advice. Lechatchila, you should only marry within your own shevet. But the Torah gives them an escape. Torah is not trapping. It's a very powerful learning in the shidduchim. Torah is not trapping you into a shidduch. Lechatchila, stay to a certain group because it's good for Klal Yisrael, it's good for you, Yerusha, so and so, but you're not trapped in. If it's not going to work, you can go marry out. You can marry a different shevet. It was transferred in a chnami. It was a piece of land that belonged to a different shevet, but it was minimal. It was very, very minimal. So you had one block. That house, this block is shevet God. That one house belongs to shevet Asher.
In a chnami. It was more divided in the same time.
For 7 years. 7 years of division. What?
It took a long time.
7 years. There was really, I don't know why, it's not really clear how long. It's four, 7 years of conquest.
I say it took a long time. From the Jews to that.
They were not conquered. It was not, it was already divided. How it worked is a little bit complicated. You're right. How exactly it worked, but basically the first 7 years they conquered the whole Eretz Yisrael. They might not have been protected. They might not have been defensible borders. But they conquered. They made a kinyan in the whole Eretz Yisrael for the first 7 years. Then they divided it. Then for the next 400 years plus, they were fighting to defend it. The defense of the land is another whole story. Like today, you know, you can have Eretz Yisrael. You have to defend it. You have to send out soldiers to stand on the border to protect it. It's not so simple. Okay, the next thing which happened is the terrible tragedy of Pilegesh Begiva, where there was a civil war where Shevet Binyamin was just about wiped out. 400 people. No, so Tu B'Av is when they decide there were no shidduchim. The whole shevet would have been eradicated. It would have been fruitful. Would have been because there were no girls left for the 400 survivors of Shevet Binyamin. There was no one for them to marry. So they permitted them, Hayra Shah, they permitted them all to marry outside. There no one was allowed to marry them. Period. There was a gazer, and no one's allowed to marry them. No one's allowed to marry them. What? Yeah, there was. Yes, they went and they told them that they permitted them to right to. Yeah, you're right. Kidnap them. Yeah, you're right. Something like that. I don't remember the details. Right. Binyamin Shiyom Shachut Hashem Binyamin Lovin Bekahal Shul Acha Ma'isi Pelagish Begiv and Nishmu Bnei Yisrael. There was a shvua. Okay, we just learned about a shvua. There was a shvua not to marry them. Klal Yisrael has a punishment. No one in Klal Yisrael is allowed to marry to this shape. To marry the shape to the sin that took place in their tribe of what they did to this girl, the Pelagish Begiva, and therefore they saw that if they would maintain the shvua, then the shevet would cease to exist. So they will matter the shvua on Tu B'Av. Again, another theme, another idea of marriage. Another example of where marriage came was the main theme of the day. Okay, let's go to the third thing. The third thing is The Meisei Midbar. This is a very powerful idea. The Meisei Midbar stopped dying. Hashem, it's not just the Meisei stopped dying. Hashem was moichel them. Hashem, the last 15,000 people that were meant to die, Hashem forgave them. The last, the last Tuba, they realized on Tuba off, the last Tisha B'Av in Midbar, they all dug graves every single year. Everyone who was from that generation, they dug a grave. And they lie down in the grave, not of Tisha B'Av, and many did not, that fifth, a certain number did not wake up. Whatever it was, the 15,000, something like that, 22,000, they did not wake up in the morning. So this was the last Tisha B'Av, and that last group dug their graves, and they did not wake, and shockingly, they woke up. Guess what? Still alive.
Was there any order to how they died?
No. So I want to explain something. This is a very interesting idea. You're saying very good. Let's talk about the first year in the Midbar. The second year. Hashem says, that's it. You're not going to enter the Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu told all 600,000 that go dig graves. So there were 600,000 graves dug in the Midbar. They all lie down, all the men, 20 and above, they all lie down in the grave. The morning of Tisha B'Av, 22,000, something like that, did not wake up. But everyone else woke up. So when Peterson went to sleep, they made many cheshbonos. They all were doing the math, they all doing the statistics. How many people are there? 600,000? How many are not going to wake up? They've been in for 40 years. The Yoy Mashon, what, 50,000? 50 so far. 15,000. So 50. Okay, whatever it is. Shabbos, right. Okay, but let's talk about the first year. There was a cheshbon, whatever the cheshbon was. Everyone knew the calculation, whatever the calculation was. And everyone, you could imagine, they went to sleep, they were making the calculation, will I wake up tomorrow? My chances are pretty good, I will wake up. Right? Everyone made the calculation. It wasn't obviously very fun to wake up because all your friends and family, they didn't wake up. Like, who didn't wake up? It wasn't very pleasant. But at least for yourself, you can make a calculation. Every year, if you were a survivor, the statistics got worse and worse. So every year, the terror, can you imagine living in the desert for 40 years like this? It's just a hell of a horror. Every year, you have to wait, looking forward to Tisha B'Av, to digging a grave, lying down, and you already know the statistics. What are the chances this year was 20%, 30%, 40%, 80%, 90%?
It's like Russian roulette.
Right. What?
You're bringing in Tikkun?
Tikkun! Dunkin' Donuts! Dunkin' Donuts! What?
The question is, was there a priority? How many people died first?
It doesn't seem so. No one knew who died. Now, here's what's very frightening. Now, listen to the chesed. Listen to this chesed. So every year, the statistics got worse and worse. 20%, 30%, 40%, because there are less people alive. You get down to year 38, 39. It's like my chance of coming up alive. There are only 30,000 people left. It's 50% chance. I'm not going to make it up. Now, whatever the numbers are, maybe it's even greater, it's ready, whatever the numbers were, the 90%. The last year, it's 100%.
Yeah,
100%. So only the 15,000 people, and they all said goodbye, and they went to sleep, no sekes. It's a vadai. And the dafka that year, when it was 100%, they all woke up. Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. Exactly. It's an incredible insight what you just said. Is that all the years when it was a suffix, if they woke up, they died. Because a suffix, it's not so bad. It was the dafka in the year when they knew they had no chance. I guess the terror of knowing it's all over. Like, you know for sure I'm not going to wake up. B'dafka, when you was the clarity, is that's B'dafka, because the Shparuch Hu gave them the chesed and had them for sure. They lived. And once they lived, doesn't say they died the next year. Can you imagine those 15,000 people who survived once they lived? It could be they lived for another 100 years. We don't know. What? They could have lived for another 100 years. It's amazing. This simcha, it's not just a simcha. Think about it. It's a very complicated idea, because think about it. Tuba B'Av is a night also. The night of Tuba B'Av, they went to sleep knowing they're going to die. We think about, Tuba B'Av is a gewaltige thing.
They
didn't sleep. Tuba B'Av, we think about, it's the day when the Meisei Midbar stopped dying. It's not that simple. It's the day when at night they lie down knowing that it's 100% we're going to die. And then the next morning they woke up and 40 years of daigus. Can you imagine? It's so hard to wrap your mind around this. 40 years the living digging graves. For 40 years.
What's the anticipation? It's scary.
It's right, every single year. It's, yeah, for, yeah, exactly. It's torture. Can you imagine such a thing? Torture every single... Oh, I survived this year. But what kind of life do you have?
The vidui wasn't 100% vidui, though.
Oh, what?
The vidui wasn't 100% vidui. The last year...
The last year was 100%. Exactly. 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 It's exactly what you said. Like, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. That's exactly why Kadosh Baruch was machal. Because the vidui was 100%. It's an incredible word. It's two obvious related to Yom Kippur. Think about this. Lo hayu yadam tavim li Yisrael ki tu be'ov and Yom HaKippurim. What's the connection? The vidui was 100%. Because the last year, two of the simchos, they stopped dying. Yeah, they stopped dying. Let's go put that in perspective. They went to sleep the night before knowing bevadai they're going to die, saying vidui, and that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu was moichel then. The dance the next morning was a very different type of dance. It was a very, very, very simcha.
That's okay. The strange thing then, when the pasuk comes to mind that we read last week, that Tom Kaladot.
Atom Koladar. That was the Atom Koladar.
Actually says that they all died, and that's, I think, the Gemara okay. that.
Number four is the day when Hoshea ben Ela, when he removed the Prois Dios, Shehoshev Yiram ben Avat. The Malch Klal Yisrael to some degree was reunified after this very bitter division between the Malchus of Yisrael and the Malchus of Yehuda. Rechavam ben Shlomo, the Malchus was broken away by Yerub ben Nevat. He took away 10 of the tribes to form his own Malchus. And they were not allowed to go up to the Oil Leregel. At this point, Hoshea took away the officers that prevented them from coming to Yerushalayim. And that means that there was a reunification. It's a very great Nechama. Nachum, Nachulami, the Sinas Chinam, the sin between the two groups of Klal Yisrael, which were at war for many, many tekufas, terrible, there was war mamish between the two different civil war for who knows how many years. This was the beginning of the end of that division. When now they were allowed to be reunified. That was number four. Number five, number five, Yom Shtidna Haruge Beitar Likvura. Haruge Beitar, this is the Bayesheni. Bayesheni, 50 years, we know what happened. How many years did it take? So I read, it's hard to find this, 18 years. That's what it says in the Megish. 18 years, the bodies of Beitar were not buried. They were not buried. Their blood was used to fertilize vineyards that belonged to Adarionus Caesar, and their bodies were piled up stacked. Like someone said yesterday, like bodies. Who's told this in a Korean
rice bags
in a Korean
grocery.
That's how the bodies were piled, like in the Holocaust. And why? To use as a wall around a city that was 18 mil by 18 mil. So in the other Sefer, it says that they have people who make calculations. If what if define 18 mil by 18 mil? How much space does the average body take up? How high was the wall? And the experts have made this calculation. And the calculations come out, they say, like, astronomical, millions. We have a record only...
80,000 times.
The numbers are totally outrageous. The numbers, to take the Chazal, if the city was 18 mil by 18 mil, and you pile up a body, one body on top of another body, let's say 5 feet, it comes out to millions of bodies. We have a record, historically, we assume it was about between 500,000 and 600,000 people were killed in Beitar, were decimated, genocide in Beitar. Chazal say 4 million, 40 million, 800 million, but there's this other calculation of 18 mil by 18 mil bodies, which also comes out...
80,000 times 600,000.
Something like way outrageous numbers, which comes out... Yeah, something like that. So this is something... The Kavura was given... These individuals were given the Kavura on this day. A day which also comes to emphasize the Chama for Klal Yisrael, because what is Kavur? Kavur is Kavod HaMeis. And Kavod is the opposite of Sinas Chinam. When you give Kavod to a Meis, Kavod to another person, that takes away from the Sinas Chinam. Number six, Number six is when they stop chopping wood for the Beis HaMikdash. They had it. Why? Because the sun no longer would properly dry out the wood. Starting with Tubav is when the days get shorter. I told this story a few times in my Rebbe, Rav Chaim Siegel, we always used to say this part, is called Yom Taver Mago. It was called Yom, the day when they broke the Mago. So the question is, why the Chazal say they break the Mago? When this winter is over, you have the whole winter, you have on your porch, you have on your front door the shovel the snow. I'm sure everyone, from the first time it shovels, you take out the shovel, and you shovel the snow, and you don't put away the shovel, you put it on the side, because it's going to snow again. Right? It's going to snow. It'll even snow Erev Pesach. Until it's safe.
Yeah.
Until it's safe, and it gets really hot, and you put away. So when the winter is over, you put away the shovel. Does anyone take the shovel and give it to the sanitation department? No one does that. You take the shovel, you put the shovel in the closet for next winter. You put it away for next winter. You don't take the shovel and you break the shovel. So why then, when the summer came, when it came Tuba of, and the people stopped chopping wood from the Beis HaMikdash, does it say they broke the axe? Tabar Mago. It's a lot of money going to a hardware store. A good axe. It costs good money. Why would you break the axe? You put the axe in the basement for next year. So my Rebbe Chaim Siegel would say, is because if you have the axe, what did they do when they broke the axe? They went to Beis Medrash. Now it's Benaz, now it's time to learn. That's what the Gemara says. And now you're free. You have free time. What do you do with your free time? You learn the Beis Medrash. If you have the axe in the basement, that means in the back of your mind, I have some vacation now for a couple of weeks, but where's my mind? Get back to business. The axe in the basement is waiting for me to get back to business. But when you break the axe, that's symbolic. Right now, for the next couple of weeks, there's nothing but learning. Nothing but Torah. When I'll need to make parnassanus, I'll get another axe. If I have the axe in the basement, in the storage room, that means in the back of my mind, I'm already planning for the next season of work. If I'm already planning for the next season of work, then my learning is not 100%. I'm sitting and learning, but while I'm listening to the shiur, I'm thinking about how to make a couple of bucks. That's not the way you learn. When you learn, you have to be fully devoted to learn. When the time will come to make parnasa, so then you'll make parnasa. But the learning has to be 100%. If the axe is still 100%, you're not going to be learning. You have to bedafka, break the axe. $100 in the garbage. It's kedai to break, to take the $100 and put it in the garbage in order that you should have yishev adas to learn properly. What?
The kinnis should be put in chains.
The kinnis, Esther and Chalam, it's the same idea. As long as the kinnis is on the shelf, so the goal is, you don't show the full emunah. You don't show the full emunah of having the kinnis. Yeah.
When you take a lunch break in the middle of a work day, you're resting. But you know in an hour from now, you're going back to work.
It's not the same. Told them the story.
You retire, and it's over, that's already
good luck for the Kailo. Okay. All right, to conclude with one short var, there are a few more things. We're out of time, so just one quick thing is a nice little remez. Maybe we'll talk about this another time, some more of these things, but remez is Tuba Av is 45 days before Rosh Hashanah. It's already the time of Mo Hashem Elokecha Shomei Machin L'Yirasai. It's already the Zman of Mo. Mo is Menhei. It's already the Zman when you already have to already start thinking about the Yom Hadin. Right. So this is a nice little remez. Mo Hashem Elokecha Shomei. Okay. We'll bring that to do some more of this tomorrow.
I'm going to lay from Brisk.
Yeah. Ah.